In localities where people do not have very much, it is necessary to divide up the troops into smaller groups to take what they need here and there, for only then will there be enough. As for dividing the spoils, this means it is necessary to divide up the troops to guard what has been gained, not letting enemies get it. Act after having made assessments. The one who first knows the measures of far and near wins. This is the rule of armed struggle. The first to move is the guest. The last to move is the host. The guest has it hard. The host has it easy. Far and near means travel. Fatigue, hunger, and cold arise from travel. An ancient book of military order says, "Words are not heard, so cymbals and drums are made. Owing to lack of visibility, banners and flags are made." Cymbals, drums, banners, and flags are used to focus and unify people's ears and eyes. Once people are unified, the brave cannot proceed alone. The timid cannot retreat alone. This is the rule for employing a group. To unify people's ears and eyes means to make people look and listen in concert so that they do not become confused and disorderly. Signals are used to indicate directions and prevent individuals from going off by themselves. So in night battles, you use many fires and drums. In daytime battles, you use many banners and flags, so as to manipulate people's ears and eyes. You use many signals to startle their perceptions and make them fear your awesome martial power. So you should take away the energy of their armies, and take away the heart of their generals. First, you must be capable of firmness in your own heart. Only then can you take away the heart of opposing generals. This is why tradition says that people of former times had the heart to take away hearts, and the ancient law of charioteers says that when the basic mind is firm, fresh energy is victorious. So morning energy is keen, midday energy slumps, evening energy recedes. Therefore, those skilled in use of arms avoid the keen energy and strike the slumping and receding. These are those who master energy. Any weakling in the world will fight in a minute if he gets excited. But when it comes to actually taking up arms and seeking to do battle, this is being possessed by energy. When this energy wanes, they will stop, get frightened, and feel regret. The reason that armies look upon strong enemies the way they look at virgin girls is that their aggressiveness is being taken advantage of, as they are stirred up over something. Using order to deal with the disorderly, using calm to deal with the clamorous, is mastering the heart. Unless your heart is wide open and your mind is orderly, you cannot be expected to be able to adapt responsively without limit, dealing with events unerringly, facing great and unexpected difficulties without upset, calmly handling everything without confusion. Standing your ground, awaiting those far away, awaiting the weary in comfort, awaiting the hungry with full stomachs, is mastering strength. This is what is meant by getting others to come to you while avoiding being induced to go to others. Avoiding confrontation with orderly ranks and not attacking great formations is mastering adaptation. So the rule for military operations is not to face a high hill and not to oppose those with their backs to a hill. This means that when opponents are on high ground, you shouldn't attack upward, and when they are charging downward, you shouldn't oppose them. Do not follow a feigned retreat. Do not attack crack troops. If opponents suddenly run away before your energy has faded, there are surely ambushes lying in wait to attack your forces. So, you should carefully restrain your officers from pursuit. Do not eat food for their soldiers. If the enemy suddenly abandon their food supplies, they should be tested first before eating, lest they be poisoned. Do not stop an army on its way home. Under these circumstances, an opponent will fight to the death. A surrounded army must be given a way out. Show them a way to life so that they will not be in the mood to fight to the death, and then you can take advantage of this to strike them. Do not press a desperate enemy. An exhausted animal will still fight, as a matter of natural law. These are the rules of military operations. Chapter 8. Adaptations. The general rule for military operations is that the military leadership receives the order from the civilian leadership to gather armies. Let there be no encampment on difficult terrain. Let diplomatic relations be established at borders. Do not stay in barren or isolated territory. When on surrounded ground, plot. When on deadly ground, fight. Being on surrounded ground means there is steep terrain on all sides, with you in the middle, so that the enemy can come and go freely, but you have a hard time getting out and back. There are routes not to be followed, armies not to be attacked, citadels not to be besieged, territory not to be fought over, orders of civilian governments not to be obeyed. Therefore, generals who know all possible adaptations to take advantage of the ground know how to use military forces. If generals do not know how to adapt advantageously, even if they know the lay of the land, they cannot take advantage of it. If they rule armies without knowing the arts of complete adaptivity, even if they know what there is to gain, they cannot get people to work for them. If you can change with the momentum of forces, then the advantage does not change. So the only ones who get hurt are others. Therefore, there is no constant structure. If you can fully comprehend this principle, you can get people to work. Therefore, the considerations of the intelligent always include both benefit and harm. As they consider benefit, their work can expand. As they consider harm, their troubles can be resolved. Benefit and harm are interdependent, so the enlightened always consider them. Therefore, what restrains competitors is harm. What keeps competitors busy is work. What motivates competitors is profit. Wear enemies out by keeping them busy and not letting them rest. But you have to have done your own work before you can do this. This work means developing a strong militia, a rich nation, an harmonious society, and an orderly way of life. So the rule of military operations is not to count on opponents not coming, but to rely on having ways of dealing with them. Not to count on opponents not attacking, but to rely on having what cannot be attacked. If you can always remember danger when you are secure, and remember chaos in times of order, watch out for danger and chaos while they are still formless, and prevent them before they happen. This is best of all. Therefore, there are five traits that are dangerous in generals. Those who are ready to die can be killed. Those who are intent on living can be captured. Those who are quick to anger can be shamed. Those who are puritanical can be disgraced. Those who love people can be troubled. If you appear in a place they are sure to rush to defend, those who love the people there will invariably hasten there to rescue them, troubling and wearying themselves in the process. These five things are faults in generals, disasters for military operations. Good generals are otherwise. They are not committed to death, yet do not expect to live. They act in accord with events, not quick to anger, not subject to embarrassment. When they see possibility, they are like tigers, otherwise they shut their doors. Their action and inaction are matters of strategy, and they cannot be pleased or angered. Chapter 9. Maneuvering Armies. Whenever you station an army to observe an opponent, cut off the mountains and stay by the valleys. Watch the light. Stay on the heights. When fighting on a hill, do not climb. This applies to an army in the mountains. One version says, fight going down, not climbing up. When cut off by water, always stay away from the water. Do not meet them in the water. It is advantageous to let half of them cross and then attack them. When you want to fight, do not face an enemy near water. Watch the light. Stay in high places. Do not face the current of the water. This applies to an army on water. In a river basin, your armies can be flooded out, and poison can be put in the streams. Facing the current means heading against the flow. It also means your boats should not be moored downstream, lest the enemy ride the current right over you. Go right through salt marshes. Just go quickly and do not tarry. If you run into an army in the middle of the salt marsh, stay by the water plants, with your back to the trees. This applies to an army in a salt marsh. On a level plateau, take up positions where it is easy to maneuver, keeping higher land to your right rear, with low ground in front and high ground behind. This applies to an army on a plateau. It was by taking advantage of the situation in these four basic ways that the Yellow Emperor overcame four lords. All martial arts began with the Yellow Emperor, a Taoist ruler of late prehistoric times, circa 2400 BCE, so he is mentioned here. Ordinarily, an army likes high places and dislikes low ground, values light, and despises darkness. High places are exhilarating, so people are comfortable, and they are also convenient for the force of momentum. Low ground is damp, which promotes illness and makes it hard to fight. Take care of physical health and stay where there are plenty of resources. When there is no sickness in the army, it is said to be invincible. Where there are hills or embankments, keep on their sunny side, with them to your right rear. This is an advantage to a military force, the help of the land. Advantage in military operation is getting help from the land. When it rains upstream and froth is coming down on the current, if you want to cross, wait until it settles. Whenever the terrain has impassable ravines, natural enclosures, natural prisons, natural traps, natural pitfalls, and natural clefts, you should leave quickly and not get near them. For myself, I keep away from these, so that opponents are nearer to them. I keep my face to these, so that opponents have their backs to them. Then you have the advantage, and he is out of luck. When an army is traveling, if there is hilly territory with many streams and ponds, or depressions overgrown with reeds, or wild forests with a luxuriant growth of plants and trees, it is imperative to search them carefully and thoroughly, for these afford stations for bushwhackers and spoilers. It is imperative to dismount and search, lest there be ambush troops hiding in such places. Also, there is concern that spies might be lurking there, watching you and listening to your directives. When the enemy is near but still, he is resting on a natural stronghold. When he is far away but tries to provoke hostilities, he wants you to move forward. If his position is accessible, it is because it is advantageous to him. What this means is that if an opponent does not keep a position on a natural stronghold but stations himself in a convenient place, It must be because there is some practical advantage in doing so. When the trees move, the enemy is coming. When there are many blinds in the undergrowth, it is misdirection. The idea of making many blinds in the underbrush is to make you think there might be bushwhackers hidden behind them. If birds start up, there are ambushers there. If the animals are frightened, there are attackers there. If dust rises high and sharp, vehicles are coming. If it is low and wide, foot soldiers are coming. Scattered wisps of smoke indicate woodcutters. Relatively small amounts of dust coming and going indicate setting up camp. Those whose words are humble while they increase war preparations are going to advance. Those whose words are strong and who advance aggressively are going to retreat. If his emissaries come with humble words, send spies to observe him, and you will find that the enemy is increasing his preparations. When light vehicles come out first and stay to the sides, they are going to set up a battle line. Those who come seeking peace without a treaty are plotting. Those who busily set out arrays of armed vehicles are expecting reinforcements. They wouldn't rush around for an ordinary rendezvous. There must be a distant force expected at a certain time, when they will join forces to come and attack you. It is best to prepare for this right away. If half their force advances and half retreats, they are trying to lure you. They feign confusion and disorder to lure you into moving forward. If they brace themselves as they stand, they are starving. When those sent to draw water first drink themselves, they are thirsty. When they see an advantage but do not advance on it, they are weary. If birds are gathered there, the place has been vacated. If there are birds on a citadel, the army has fled. If there are calls in the night, they are afraid. They are fearful and uneasy, so they call to each other to strengthen themselves. If the army is unsettled, it means the general is not taken seriously. If signals move, that means they are in confusion. Signals are used to unify the group, so if they move about unsteadily, it means the ranks are in disarray. If their emissaries are irritable, it means they are tired. If they kill their horses for meat, it means that the soldiers have no food. When they have no pots and do not go back to their quarters, they are desperate adversaries. When there are murmurings, lapses in duties, and extended conversations, the loyalty of the group has been lost. Murmurings describe talk of true feelings. Lapses in duties indicate trouble with superiors. When the military leadership has lost the people's loyalty, they talk to each other frankly about the trouble with their superiors. When they give out numerous rewards, it means they are at an impasse. When they give out numerous punishments, it means they are worn out. When the force of their momentum is exhausted, they give repeated rewards to please their soldiers, lest they rebel en masse. When people are so worn out that they cannot carry out orders, they are punished again and again to establish authority. To be violent at first and wind up fearing one's people is the epitome of ineptitude. Those who come in a conciliatory manner want to rest. When forces angrily confront you, but delay engagement, yet do not leave, it is imperative to watch them carefully. They are preparing a surprise attack. In military matters, it is not necessarily beneficial to have more strength, only to avoid acting aggressively. It is enough to consolidate your power, assess opponents, and get people. That is all. The individualist without strategy, who takes opponents lightly, will inevitably become the captive of others. If you have no ulterior scheme and no forethought, but just rely on your individual bravery, flippantly taking opponents lightly and giving no consideration to the situation, you will surely be taken prisoner. If soldiers are punished before a personal attachment to the leadership is formed, they will not submit. And if they do not submit, they are hard to employ. If punishments are not executed after personal attachment has been established with the soldiers, then they cannot be employed. When there are underlying feelings of appreciation and trust, and the hearts of the soldiers are already bonded to the leadership, if punishments are relaxed, the soldiers will become haughty and impossible to employ. Therefore, direct them through cultural arts. Unify them through martial arts. This means certain victory. Cultural art means humaneness. Martial art means law. Command them humanely and benevolently. Unify them strictly and sternly. When benevolence and sternness are both evident, it is possible to be sure of victory. When directives are consistently carried out to edify the populace accepts. When directives are not consistently carried out to edify the populace does not accept. When directives are consistently carried out, there is mutual satisfaction between the leadership and the group. Consistent means all along. In ordinary times, it is imperative that benevolence and trustworthiness, along with dignity and order, be manifest to people from the start, so that later, if they are faced with enemies, it is possible to meet the situation in an orderly fashion, with the full trust and acceptance of the people. Chapter 10. Terrain. Some terrain is easily passable. In some, you get hung up. Some makes for a standoff. Some is narrow. Some is steep. Some is wide open. When both sides can come and go, the terrain is said to be easily passable. When the terrain is easily passable, take up your position first, choosing the high and sunny side, convenient to supply routes, for advantage in battle. When you can go but have a hard time getting back, you are said to be hung up. On this type of terrain, if the opponent is unprepared, you will prevail if you go forth. But if the enemy is prepared, if you go forth and do not prevail, you will have a hard time getting back, to your disadvantage. When it is disadvantageous for either side to go forth, it is called standoff terrain. On standoff terrain, even though the opponent offers you an advantage, you do not go for it. You withdraw, inducing the enemy half out, and then you attack, to your advantage. On narrow terrain, if you are there first, you should fill it up to await the opponent. If the opponent is there first, do not pursue if the opponent fills the narrows. Pursue if the opponent does not fill the narrows. On steep terrain, if you are there first, you should occupy the high and sunny side to await the opponent. If the opponent is there first, withdraw from there and do not pursue. On wide open terrain, the force of momentum is equalized, and it is hard to make a challenge, disadvantageous to fight. Understanding these six kinds of terrain is the highest responsibility of the general, and it is imperative to examine them. These are the configurations of terrain. Generals who do not know them lose. So among military forces, there are those who rush, those who tarry, those who fall, those who crumble, those who riot, and those who get beaten. These are not natural disasters, but faults of the generals. Those who have equal momentum, but strike 10 with 1, are in a rush. Those whose soldiers are strong, but whose officers are weak, tarry. Those whose officers are strong, but whose soldiers are weak, fall. When colonels are angry and obstreperous, and fight on their own out of spite when they meet opponents, and the generals do not know their abilities, they crumble. Generally speaking, the entire military leadership has to be of one mind. All of the military forces have to cooperate in order to be able to defeat opponents. When the generals are weak and lack authority, instructions are not clear. Officers and soldiers lack consistency, and they form battle lines every which way. This is riot. When the generals cannot assess opponents, clash with much greater numbers or more powerful forces, and do not sort out the levels of skill among their own troops, these are the ones who get beaten. If you employ soldiers without sorting out the skilled and unskilled, the brave and the timid, you are bringing defeat on yourself. These are six ways to defeat. Understanding this is the ultimate responsibility of the generals. They must be examined. First is not assessing numbers. Second is lack of a clear system of punishments and rewards. Third is failure in training. Fourth is irrational overexcitement. Fifth is ineffectiveness of law and order. And sixth is failure to choose the strong and resolute. The contour of the land is an aid to an army. Sizing up opponents to determine victory, assessing dangers and distances, is the proper course of action for military leaders. Those who do battle knowing these will win. Those who do battle without knowing these will lose. Therefore, when the laws of war indicate certain victory, it is surely appropriate to do battle, even if the government says there is to be no battle. If the laws of war do not indicate victory, it is appropriate not to do battle, even if the government orders war. Thus, one advances without seeking glory, retreats without avoiding blame, only protecting people to the benefit of the government as well, thus rendering valuable service to the nation. Advancing and retreating contrary to government orders is not done for personal interest, but only to safeguard the lives of the people and accord with the true benefit of the government. Such loyal employees are valuable to a nation. Look upon your soldiers as you do infants, and they willingly go into deep valleys with you. Look upon your soldiers as beloved children, and they willingly die with you. If you are so nice to them that you cannot employ them, so kind to them that you cannot command them, so casual with them that you cannot establish order, they are like spoiled children, useless. Rewards should not be used alone. Punishments should not be relied on in isolation. Otherwise, like spoiled children, people will become accustomed to either enjoying or resenting everything. This is harmful and renders them useless. If you know your soldiers are capable of striking, but do not know whether the enemy is invulnerable to a strike, you have half a chance of winning. If you know the enemy is vulnerable to a strike, but do not know if your soldiers are incapable of making such a strike, you have half a chance of winning. If you know the enemy is vulnerable to a strike, and know your soldiers can make the strike, but do not know if the lay of the land makes it unsuitable for battle, you have half a chance of winning. Therefore, those who know martial arts do not wander when they move, and do not become exhausted when they rise up. So it is said that when you know yourself and others, victory is not in danger. When you know sky and earth, victory is inexhaustible. When you know what is to others' advantage and what is to your advantage, you are not in danger. When you know the season and the terrain, you do not come to an impasse. Chapter 11. 9 grounds. According to the rule for military operations, there are 9 kinds of ground. Where local interests fight among themselves on their own territory, this is called a ground of dissolution. When soldiers are attached to the land and are near home, they fall apart easily. When you enter others' land, but not deeply, this is called light ground. This means the soldiers can all get back easily. The land that would be advantageous to you if you got it, and to opponents if they got it, is called ground of contention. A ground of inevitable contention is any natural barricade or strategic pass. Land where you and others can come and go is called a trafficked ground. Land that is surrounded on 3 sides by competitors and would give the first to get it access to all the people on the continent is called intersecting ground. Intersecting ground means the intersections of main arteries linking together numerous highway systems. First, occupy this ground, and the people will have to go with you. So if you get it, you are secure. If you lose it, you are in peril. When you enter deeply into others' land, past many cities and towns, this is called heavy ground. This is ground from which it is hard to return. When you traverse mountain forests, steep defiles, marshes, or any route difficult to travel, this is called bad ground. When the way in is narrow, and the way out is circuitous, so a small enemy force can strike you, even though your numbers are greater, this is called surrounded ground. If you are capable of extraordinary adaptation, you can travel this ground. When you will survive if you fight quickly and perish if you do not, this is called dying ground. People on dying ground are, as it were, sitting in a leaking boat, lying in a burning house. So let there be no battle on a ground of dissolution. Let there be no stopping on light ground. Let there be no attack on a ground of contention. Let there be no cutting off of trafficked ground. On intersecting ground, form communications. On heavy ground, plunder. On bad ground, keep going. On surrounded ground, make plans. On dying ground, fight. On a ground of dissolution, the soldiers might run away. Light ground is where soldiers have first entered enemy territory and do not yet have their backs to the wall. Hence, the minds of the soldiers are not really concentrated, and they are not ready for battle. It is not advantageous to attack an enemy on ground of contention. What is advantageous is to get there first. Trafficked ground should not be cut off, so that the roads may be used advantageously as supply routes. On intersecting ground, if you establish alliances, you are safe. If you lose alliances, you are in peril. On heavy ground, plundering means building up supplies. On bad ground, since you cannot entrench, you should make haste to leave there. On surrounded ground, bring surprise tactics into play. If they fall into dying ground, then everyone in the army will spontaneously fight. This is why it is said, "Put them on dying ground, and then they will live." Those who are called the good militarists of old could make opponents lose contact between front and back lines, lose reliability between large and small groups, lose mutual concern for the welfare of the different social classes among them, lose mutual accommodation between the rulers and the ruled, lose enlistments among the soldiers, lose coherence within the armies. They went into action when it was advantageous, stopped when it was not. They set up changes to confuse their opponents, striking them here and there, terrorizing and disarraying them in such a way that they had no time to plan. It may be asked, when a large, well-organized opponent is about to come to you, how do you deal with it? The answer is that you first take away what they like, and then they will listen to you. The condition of a military force is that its essential factor is speed, taking advantage of others' failure to catch up, going by routes they do not expect, attacking where they are not on guard. This means that to take advantage of unpreparedness, lack of foresight or lack of caution on the part of opponents, it is necessary to proceed quickly. It won't work if you hesitate. In general, the pattern of invasion is that invaders become more intense the farther they enter alien territory, to the point where the native rulership cannot overcome them. Glean from rich fields, and the army will have enough to eat. Take care of your health and avoid stress. Consolidate your energy and build up your strength. Maneuver your troops and assess strategies so as to be unfathomable. Consolidate your keenest energy, save up your extra strength, keep your form concealed and your plans secret, being unfathomable to enemies, waiting for a vulnerable gap to advance upon. Put them in a spot where they have no place to go, and they will die before fleeing. If they are to die there, what can they not do? Warriors exert their full strength. When warriors are in great danger, then they have no fear. When there is nowhere to go, they are firm. When they are deeply involved, they stick to it. If they have no choice, they will fight. For this reason, the soldiers are alert without being drilled, enlist without being drafted, are friendly without treaties, are trustworthy without commands. This means that when warriors are in mortal danger, everyone, high and low, has the same aim, so they are spontaneously on the alert without being drilled, are spontaneously sympathetic without being drafted, and are spontaneously trustworthy without treaties or commands. Prohibit omens to get rid of doubt, and soldiers will never leave you. If your soldiers have no extra goods, it is not that they dislike material goods. If they have no more life, it is not that they don't want to live long. On the day the order to march goes out, the soldiers weep. So a skillful military operation should be like a swift snake that counters with its tail when someone strikes at its head, counters with its head when someone strikes at its tail, and counters with both head and tail when someone strikes at its middle. This represents the method of a battle line, responding swiftly when struck. A manual of 8 classical battle formations says, make the back the front, make the front the back, with 4 heads and 8 tails. Make the head anywhere, and when the enemy lunges into the middle, head and tail both come to the rescue. The question may be asked, can a military force be made to be like this swift snake? The answer is that it can. Even people who dislike each other, if in the same boat, will help each other out in trouble. It is the force of the situation that makes this happen. Therefore, tethered horses and buried wheels are not sufficiently reliable. Horses are tethered to make a stationary battle line. Wheels are buried to make the vehicles immovable. Even so, this is not sufficiently secure and reliable. It is necessary to allow adaptation to changes, placing soldiers in deadly situations so that they will fight spontaneously, helping each other out like two hands. This is the way to security and certain victory. To even out bravery and make it uniform is the Tao of organization. To be successful with both the hard and soft is based on the pattern of the ground. If you can get the advantage of the ground, you can overcome opponents even with soft, weak troops. How much the more with hard, strong troops? What makes it possible for both strong and weak to be useful is the configuration of the ground. Therefore, those skilled in military operations achieve cooperation in a group, so that directing the group is like directing a single individual with no other choice. The business of the general is quiet and secret, fair and orderly. His plans are calm and deeply hidden, so no one can figure them out. His regime is fair and orderly, so no one dares take him lightly. He can keep the soldiers unaware, make them ignorant. He changes his actions and revises his plans so that people will not recognize them. He changes his abode and goes by a circuitous route so that people cannot anticipate him. When people never understand what your intention is, then you win. The great white mountain man said, "The reason deception is valued in military operations is not just for deceiving enemies, but to begin with for deceiving one's own troops, to get them to follow unknowingly." When a leader establishes a goal with the troops, he is like one who climbs up to a high place and then tosses away the ladder. When a leader enters deeply into enemy territory with troops, he brings out their potential. He has them burn the boats and destroy the pots, drives them like sheep, none knowing where they are going. To assemble armies and put them into dangerous situations is the business of generals. Adaptations to different ground, advantages of contraction and expansion, patterns of human feelings and conditions, these must be examined. When he talks about the advantages and disadvantages of contraction and expansion, he means that the ordinary patterns of human feelings all change according to the various types of ground. Generally, the way it is with invaders is that they unite when deep in enemy territory, but are prone to dissolve while on the fringes. When you leave your country and cross the border on a military operation, that is isolated ground. When it is accessible from all directions, it is trafficked ground. When penetration is deep, that is heavy ground. When penetration is shallow, that is light ground. When your back is to an impassable fastness and before you are narrow straits, that is surrounded ground. When there is nowhere to go, that is deadly ground. So, on a ground of dissolution, I would unify the minds of the troops. On light ground, I would have them keep in touch. On a ground of contention, I would have them follow up quickly. On an intersecting ground, I would be careful about defense. On a trafficked ground, I would make alliances firm. On heavy ground, I would ensure continuous supplies. On bad ground, I would urge them onward. On surrounded ground, I would close up the gaps. On deadly ground, I would indicate to them there is no surviving. So the psychology of soldiers is to resist when surrounded, fight when it cannot be avoided, and obey in extremes. Not until soldiers are surrounded do they each have the determination to resist the enemy and sustain victory. When they are desperate, they put up a united defense. Therefore, those who do not know the plans of competitors cannot prepare alliances. Those who do not know the lay of the land cannot maneuver their forces. Those who do not use local guides cannot take advantage of the ground. The military of an effective rulership must know all these things. When the military of an effective rulership attacks a large country, the people cannot unite. When its power overwhelms opponents, alliances cannot come together. If you are able to find out opponents' plans, take advantage of the ground, and maneuver opponents so that they are helpless, then even a large country cannot assemble enough people to stop you. Therefore, if you do not compete for alliances anywhere, do not foster authority anywhere, but just extend your personal influence, threatening opponents. This makes town and country vulnerable. Give out rewards that are not in the rules. Give out directives that are not in the code. Consider the merit to give the reward without rules set up beforehand. Observe the opponent to make promises without prior setup of codes. Employ the entire armed force like employing a single person. Employ them with actual tasks. Do not talk to them. Motivate them with benefits. Do not tell them about harm. Just employ them to fight. Don't tell them your strategy. Let them know what benefit there is in it for them. Don't tell them about the potential harm. If the truth leaks out, your strategy will be foiled. If the soldiers worry, they will be hesitant and fearful. Confront them with annihilation, and they will then survive. Plunge them into a deadly situation, and they will then live. When people fall into danger, they are then able to strive for victory. So the task of a military operation is to accord deceptively with the intentions of the enemy. If you concentrate totally on the enemy, you can kill its military leadership 1,000 miles away. This is skillful accomplishment of the task. First, you go along with their intentions. Subsequently, you kill their generals. This is skill in accomplishing the task. So on the day the war is declared, borders are closed, passports are torn up, and emissaries are not let through. Matters are dealt with strictly at headquarters. Strictness at headquarters in the planning stage refers to secrecy. When opponents present openings, you should penetrate them immediately. Get to what they want first. Subtly anticipate them. Maintain discipline and adapt to the enemy in order to determine the outcome of the war. Thus, at first you are like a maiden, so the enemy opens his door. Then, you are like a rabbit on the loose, so the enemy cannot keep you out. Chapter 12. Fire Attack. There are 5 kinds of fire attack. Burning people, burning supplies, burning equipment, burning storehouses, and burning weapons. The use of fire must have a basis and require certain tools. There are appropriate times for setting fires, namely when the weather is dry and windy. Generally, in fire attacks, it is imperative to follow up on the crises caused by the fires. When fire is set inside an enemy camp, then respond quickly from outside. If the soldiers are calm when fire breaks out, wait. Do not attack. When the fire reaches the height of its power, follow up if possible. Hold back if not. In general, fire is used to throw enemies into confusion so that you can attack them. When fire can be set out in the open, do not wait until it can be set inside a camp. Set it when the time is right. When fire is set upwind, do not attack downwind. It is not effective to go against the momentum of the fire, because the enemy will surely fight to the death. If it is windy during the day, the wind will stop at night. A daytime wind will stop at night. A night wind will stop at daylight. Armies must know there are adaptations of the 5 kinds of fire attack and adhere to them scientifically. It will not do just to know how to attack others with fire. It is imperative to know how to prevent others from attacking you. So the use of fire to help an attack means clarity. Use of water to help an attack means strength. Water can cut off, but cannot plunder. Water can be used to divide up an opposing army, so that their force is divided and yours is strong. To win in battle, or make a successful siege, without rewarding the meritorious, is unlucky, and earns the name of stinginess. Therefore it is said that an enlightened government considers this, and good military leadership rewards merit. They do not mobilize when there is no advantage, do not attack when there is nothing to gain, do not fight when there is no danger. Armaments are instruments of ill omen. War is a dangerous affair. It is imperative to prevent disastrous defeat, so it will not do to mobilize an army for petty reasons. Arms are only to be used when there is no choice but to do so. A government should not mobilize an army out of anger. Military leaders should not provoke war out of wrath. Act when it is beneficial. Desist if it is not. Anger can revert to joy. Wrath can revert to delight. But a nation destroyed cannot be restored to existence, and the dead cannot be restored to life. Therefore, an enlightened government is careful about this. A good military leadership is alert to this. This is the way to secure a nation and keep the armed forces whole. If the government is always prudent about the use of arms, it can thereby make the nation secure. If military leadership is always wary of taking war lightly, it can therefore keep the armed forces whole. Chapter 13. On the Use of Spies. A major military operation is a severe drain on the nation, and may be kept up for years in the struggle for one day's victory. So to fail to know the conditions of opponents because of reluctance to give rewards for intelligence is extremely inhumane, uncharacteristic of a true military leader, uncharacteristic of an assistant of the government, uncharacteristic of a victorious chief. So what enables an intelligent government and a wise military leadership to overcome others and achieve extraordinary accomplishments is foreknowledge. Foreknowledge cannot be gotten from ghosts and spirits, cannot be had by analogy, cannot be found out by calculation. It must be obtained from people who know the conditions of the enemy. There are five kinds of spy. The local spy, the inside spy, the reverse spy, the dead spy, and the living spy. When the five kinds of spies are all active, no one knows their roots. This is called organizational genius and is valuable to the leadership. Local spies are hired from among the people of a locality. Inside spies are hired from among enemy officials. Reverse spies are hired from among enemy spies. Dead spies transmit false intelligence to enemy spies. Living spies come back to report. Among officials of the opposing regime, there are those that can be secretly approached and bribed so as to find out conditions in their country and discover any plans against you. They can also be used to create rifts and disharmony. Therefore, no one in the armed forces is treated as familiarly as our spies. No one is given rewards as rich as those given to spies. And no matter is more secret than espionage. If spies are not treated well, they may become renegades and work for the enemy. One cannot use spies without sagacity and knowledge. One cannot use spies without humanity and justice. One cannot get the truth from spies without subtlety. This is a very delicate matter indeed. Spies are useful everywhere. Every matter requires prior knowledge. If an item of intelligence is heard before a spy reports it, then both the spy and the one who told about it die. Whenever you want to attack an army, besiege a city, or kill a person, first you must know the identities of their defending generals, their associates, their visitors, their gatekeepers, and their chamberlains. So have your spies find out. Whenever you are going to attack and fight, first you have to know the talents of the people employed by the opponent, so you can deal with them according to their abilities. You must seek out enemy agents who have come to spy on you. Bribe them and induce them to stay with you, so you can use them as reverse spies. By intelligence thus obtained, you can find local spies and inside spies to employ. By intelligence thus obtained, you can cause the misinformation of dead spies to be conveyed to the enemy. By intelligence thus obtained, you can get living spies to work as planned. It is essential for a leader to know about the five kinds of espionage, and this knowledge depends on reverse spies. So reverse spies must be treated well. So, only a brilliant ruler or a wise general who can use the highly intelligent for espionage is sure of great success. This is essential for military operations, and the armies depend on this in their actions. It will not do for the army to act without knowing the opponent's condition, and to know the opponent's condition is impossible without espionage.
We hope you have enjoyed this production of The Art of War by Sun Tzu, translated by Thomas Cleary, read by Lloyd James. Text copyright 1988-2009 by Thomas Cleary. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.